Greetings, my friends. Welcome to the next episode of the Mint Mob Podcast. Jason here, joined by my buddy Alex across the pond in Germany. We're going to jump into what's going on in the Goodfellas universe today, as well as free flow through any topics that come to mind. We just did a mint this morning, so we're pretty stoked and happy about how that went. So let's check in with Alex. What's up, buddy? How are you?
Hey, man, I'm great. It's not morning for everyone. Not everyone is living in the United States, Arizona, unfortunately. Is it still like as hot as it was like weeks ago? Cool down.
Yeah, well, I mean, here in the desert, once it gets hot, it generally just stays hot until, you know, like the middle of summer is over. But it's funny, over the last couple weeks, we haven't really had crazy hot weather. We actually had a few days that were, you know, around the 100 degree or below the 100 degree mark. And then this past week and yesterday, it was in the 90s. It's supposed to be cooler for the next, for the next few days. So it's summer hasn't really been all that bad. Normally we get a lot of days of 110, 112, that sort of thing. But hopefully we don't get that this year, and that won't hurt my feelings at all.
But do you feel like you get used to it after some time?
No.
Or is it like bad? Yeah, okay.
No.
That's what I expected, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, hot is hot. Like, it's funny because, you know, being an active person, I go out in it regardless anyway, you know. But so many people just who, you know, don't take care of themselves or they're out of shape or they're whatever, they just sit in the house or sit in their car or they go to the store. They never spend any time outside. So it's kind of like winter in other areas where people just lock themselves in.
Yeah, I totally get that. I mean, I personally hate moving when it's very hot as well. Like when it's like summertime, I always like try to go to the gym at like 5 a.m. in the morning. It would definitely be a problem for me because like it doesn't even cool down at night, right?
Not really. I mean, it'll cool off and it'll feel cooler just because, you know, you're not in direct sunlight, but for the most part it stays hot, you know, until midnight. Before it starts to cool off, because the earth just soaks up heat all day long and then it radiates it out, you know, as the sun goes down. So by the time, the coolest part of the day is obviously daybreak. So early in the morning, just before the sun rises, that's the coolest part of the day. And in summertime, it'll still be like 80, 85 degrees at daybreak, you know, and then before you know it, it's 90 and then 100 and it just never ends. So that's probably the hardest thing to deal with if you're not used to kind of dealing with the heat, you know.
It's funny that you just said that. Obviously the right term would be to say it cools off instead of it cools down. But in my little mind, it would make more sense to say it cools down because obviously the temperature goes down.
Yeah, actually both are acceptable. You'll hear people say it both ways, but it means the same thing.
Okay. Learn something. So, talking about heat, we can also speak a little bit about the crypto markets. We've witnessed a pretty big run-up the past few weeks. I'm not sure, like, I think ETH is still overperforming. I think we saw ETH at 3,800 today or yesterday. And let's see what Bitcoin is doing.
Well, on the month it is, yeah.
Solana also. Yeah, and Solana has almost gotten the $200 mark back. So, looks like altcoins are doing pretty good. And I think I read that a lot of Bitcoin holders are currently taking their profits. I think many people were, you know, aiming for 120,000 for some reason to, you know, realize the first profits. And I think that's one thing you were like aiming for as well, right?
Yeah, that's correct. 120 was my first target, and that was, of course, before the three crypto bills that passed the House, and then, of course, we're still waiting for some sort of interest rate adjustment, so we'll see, you know, what happens with all that, but all of those things, plus the passage of the big spending bill, you know, Trump's big, beautiful bill, which just spends more money, I mean, all these things are just inflationary, and as long as that is part of what's happening, you know, I don't have any intention of really being too hurried to sell and too much of a hurry to sell anything because all of those things point to higher prices.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean that's what people tend to forget, you know, even when you cut interest rates and money gets, you know, becomes cheaper again. I mean, yeah, you know, money flows into assets and your Bitcoin is your Bitcoin price and your altcoin prices go up. But in the end, you shouldn't forget that it's actually a pretty bad thing for the country. Obviously, people holding fiat are the ones losing, right? So, yeah, I mean, you know, to keep the printer running is actually not a good thing, but obviously crypto people pray for it as a lot of money flows into the crypto markets. But yeah, man, I don't know where that goes. I mean, we spoke about, you know, financial systems and how everything will collapse one day. But it's like crazy to see. I mean, for crypto, it's obviously running pretty good right now, but you know, when you see all these kind of things happening, I'm like, I keep getting more confident with Bitcoin, you know, like with the whole tech and with what Bitcoin provides to people. And yeah, man, I wish I started, you know, accumulating earlier.
Well, I think everyone thinks that, you know, there's not a single person out there that's like, oh shit, I'm so glad I waited. Everybody's like, no, I want more now. You know, I should have bought more. I mean, shit, imagine being, you know, imagine traveling back in time and just buying a dollar's worth of Bitcoin when it was 5 cents, you know. How cool would that be, right? Like, if you're sitting on 20 Bitcoin today, you know, a couple million dollars, and, you know, probably living off the interest, you know, having a nice little swing of things. But, you know, the truth is, like, there's still 100x in Bitcoin. It's just going to take time to get there. I mean, it took 15, 16 years to get to where we are today. So we've got another 15 to 20 years to go as we approach that, you know, sort of milestone mark, I would say, as like the top of the S-curve where, you know, most of the adoption has been achieved and a lot of the tech has been implemented and, you know, everybody in the world has heard of it. And of course, you know, they understand how quickly they can interact or transact with the chain. So I don't see it slowing down anytime soon. In fact, it's interesting. I went to the coin dealer the other day to sell some silver. I took about 200 ounces of silver, actually 180 ounces of silver, and to sell. And the first word I heard when I walked into the coin shop was Bitcoin. The guys behind the counter were talking about Bitcoin. And specifically like this numismatic Bitcoin that had been created to represent Bitcoin like 10 or 15 years ago at a trade show. But apparently there's been more people, you know, selling through some of their precious metals. And the reason being is they see more opportunity in things like crypto. So, you know, I think it's happening, especially in those circles where people understand how money works.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny because I already, you know, listened to people speak about Bitcoin, and you know, one of them was like, yeah, that, you know, that that ship has sailed already. Like, they were like, it's over 100,000, and you know, you have to pay attention to what's being built right now, because now is the thing you know, being created that or developed that is going to make 1,000x in the future. So you need to pay attention to this, and Bitcoin is over, like the opportunity is gone. And it's funny, if you look at like X, Twitter, whatever, and you know, it's obvious, like obviously we're so early still, but on the other hand, there are already people thinking that you missed the boat, right? And that's crazy, man. I mean, people cannot imagine Bitcoin at like a million.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, there's a certain amount of truth to that in that, you know, the 1,000x Bitcoin days are gone. Like, those days are gone for sure. Like, I don't think Bitcoin 1,000x is from here. You know, unless somehow we, you know, colonize Mars and we're basically transacting in Bitcoin as a multi-planetary species and the population has expanded, you know, into some incredible number of people. But, I mean, that's way far off. And, I mean, The thing that we have to look at is what's happening right now with total assets globally being something like 1 quadrillion, I think it is. And, you know, gold is 2% of global assets. Bitcoin is 0.02% of that. You know, if you just take the base case where where Bitcoin supplants gold, then that puts you at that mark where Bitcoin has 100x'd. So that's totally doable. So yeah, I think there's definitely 100x. It's not going to happen tomorrow. It's going to be a decades long thing, but there's definitely 100x left in Bitcoin.
Yeah, but like imagine someone like buying Bitcoin in 2010. Let's say he put his savings in there, held until today. Would you say that guy was smart or that guy was lucky?
Well, I mean, you know, without knowing the guy, it could be either, right? Or it could
be. No, but like what I wanted to say is that obviously if you put all your money into such a project, like, which is so young, obviously you can see the potential it may have, mm-hmm. but obviously there are a lot of projects out there who have a great potential, even like NFT projects that seem like they have a good idea, but in the end, if it comes to execution and everything, like if you actually invested in Bitcoin once it started, like you can tell me you were convinced that it's going to work out, but there were probably plenty of projects back then that might have looked promising, and you like, do you feel like you could have known that it's going to work out if you followed the Bitcoin board, for example, and you know Satoshi's posts, or was it pure luck and a high risk if you invested so much money back then?
Well, I mean, I think the beauty of it is back then you didn't have to invest a bunch of money to acquire tokens. So, I mean, like I said, if you bought $1 worth of Bitcoin when it was 5 cents, that's 20 Bitcoin, right? But that was 15 years ago, and you would have had to see in the future to know whether or not it was, you know, a smart move. Was it risky? Absolutely. Was it speculative? Absolutely. Was the idea sound? Absolutely. But just because the idea was sound doesn't mean that adoption was going to occur. So yeah, there's a certain amount of luck, I think, that had to take place. Or you could say, you know, from an Austrian economics standpoint, that it was inevitable because countries around the world continued to devalue their currencies, make people poorer, and everybody needed an escape. So I think the people who bought in early and were sort of the mindset that Austrian economics are the way to think about money, that a deflationary store of value is what's needed, that currencies are failing, that, you know, me as an individual, I need to protect my, basically my life force, because that's how you store money. You store the product of your life force is stored as money. And I need to make sure that it's something I can put into the future across space and time. Then you understand that the idea of Bitcoin was good, but none of that guarantees its success. And even today, like, there's nothing guaranteeing its success. Like, it could fail tomorrow, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen. So all you can do is make the best decision you can on the information that you have. And unfortunately, so many of us, you know, myself included, many, many times, I wait for too much information before I make a decision that really wouldn't have cost me much. Like, if I had taken the time, like, I heard about Bitcoin in like 2013, and I actually set up a little laptop miner in my house and couldn't really figure it out. Couldn't figure out how it was working, or if it even worked at all. And if I had actually taken a little bit more time to research and study it rather than just glance at the headlines, then I probably would have been more conscious of like setting up a miner and earning some Bitcoin or just buying some Bitcoin outright. But at the time, there were other things in my life that were more important, and this was a speculative play, even though my study of money and my understanding of Austrian economics made me align with Bitcoin. So again, it's just one of those things. It's like, okay, well, is it hitting me at the right point in my life? Yeah, I get it, but am I going to take the time to research it? Blah, 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 blah. And then, of course, later on, I bought in when Bitcoin was like $400, and then I sold it when it was like 2,500 or 3,000. I can't remember, somewhere around in there. And, you know, you just don't know. You have no idea. But when you see gains like that outside of a traditional market, it's just unreal to get like a five bagger, a 500% return on anything, that, you know, thinking that Bitcoin could go to 10,000 or 20,000 or 100,000 just seemed so ridiculous. So not only would you have had to buy it 15 years ago, you would have had to hold it through all of those opportunities to sell. And I think if you're the type of person who bought 100 Bitcoin for $5, you know, and understand how markets work and how speculative plays work, you would have probably traded half of it and just sat on half of it forever. you know, and looking back, that's probably what I would have done had I taken a closer look. But yeah, there's a massive amount of luck. There's a massive amount of foresight. And, you know, even if you know what's happening, does it hit you at the right point in your life, right? Like, all these things have to line up. So yeah, luck definitely plays a role.
Yeah, I mean, of course you said that, or you mentioned that you did not really need to put a lot of money into Bitcoin back then. But, you know, when you read about all these Satoshi era wallets that, you know, or just realized their gains, bought Bitcoin for 50K back then. That's like what I was thinking about. That's crazy, actually. If those were guys, you know, having so much money that they didn't care about that, okay. But like they paid 50K and now cashed out over a billion. And this is, yeah, this is kind of suspicious in my opinion. But
it's just smart, I think.
It's also... Yeah, I mean, it's smart to some degree, but as you just said, most people would have sold a lot earlier. And it's funny how this space makes you feel like whatever you do is the wrong decision. Because, you know, if you, yeah, right? Like if a coin goes up and you take profits and it like it keeps going up, everyone is like, you paper handed your coins and you had no diamond hands and blah, blah, blah. And if you diamond hand everything and everything goes down to zero, you'll, the loser as well, like, right? Feels like unless you actually hit the top, you know, you're losing.
Yeah, but I mean, at the end of the day, that's the thing that's wrong with this market, because again, we have so many youthful players who've never seen a market cycle before, and a lot of them are learning about markets right now. You know, like, you don't if you're going to be someone who understands how to build wealth, you're not going to follow the crowd. You're not going to worry if someone calls you a name. Oh my God, paper. Oh, who cares? And it's like, you're never going to go broke taking profits, brother. Right? You're never going to go broke taking profits. So at the end of the day, if you took profits, just like I said, like I sold my four Bitcoin, you know, I guess it was close to 10 years ago now, I bought in for whatever it was, 1200, 1400 bucks. And I sold for 12,000. I mean, I still made money. Obviously, that would be worth $400,000 today, but hey, I still made money. I'm not going to go broke because I took those profits, you know? Now, looking back, of course, it makes more sense to hold them, but you don't have the benefit of hindsight when you're in the moment. You just have to make the most of the decision that you have in front of you. So, you know, it's one of those things where, again, like you said, you have to hold through, or you see these Bitcoin era, or these early era Bitcoin wallets moving money around. If they are... the type of people who aren't necessarily money motivated, but just want to live a life of freedom. So add up like everything that it takes for you to live the lifestyle that you want to live. And for most people, it's just a couple $100,000. Like, they want a nice car, they want a nice house, they want to be able to travel whenever they want to travel, they want to be able to go out with friends and eat at whatever restaurant they want to eat at without having to worry about what the bill is, right? So if you think about it, if you bought Bitcoin for pennies, and let's say you had 10 Bitcoin that you bought for, you know, 50 cents or whatever. And today it's worth, you know, $1 million or $1.2 million, whatever it is. Okay, that's fantastic. You can make, you know, 5% on that money just parking it in an account somewhere, and you can live off that interest. Like, let's say you want to live a lifestyle. Let's say it takes $50,000 to $60,000 to support your lifestyle. Well, $1 million sitting in an account bearing 5% a year pays you that. Now multiply that by, you know, $20 of Bitcoin or $40 of Bitcoin that you bought back in the day. Now you've got, you know, 2 million or 5 million or whatever. And again, at 5% interest, you can get $100,000 a year in passive income, $200,000, 5 million dollars at 5% a year is going to give you $250,000 a year. I mean, this is the type of income that most people would just absolutely love to have, and especially love to have it not having to work for it. So you can't blame these guys for moving their money around or selling out. It doesn't really matter what happens to them at this point, because they can live off even minute interest rates on the money that they're making from selling the Bitcoin.
Would you say that, you know, once you reach that level of, you know, financial freedom, it kind of kills your drive, your motivation?
Well, there's a study done that basically says your level of happiness. Now, I don't know about your, you know, your level of personal achievement or accomplishment. That's a totally different thing. But your level of happiness or contentment basically doesn't change after something like, I think it was $60,000 a year. Because most people have the ability to purchase most of the stuff that they want and live where they want, you know, on a reasonable salary. So like after that point in time, it just comes down to preferences. And then most of the people that I know who are seven-figure entrepreneurs will tell you life doesn't change at all, you know, after you've reached, you know, $5 to $10 million. Like at that point, you can just do whatever you want, whenever you want. Like you may not be able to buy a plane, but you can rent a plane and fly wherever you want to fly and not even feel it, you know. Or you can rent a yacht for days on end and not even feel it. So at the end of the day, like, what do you want? Do you want to be the owner? Do you want to just have access to these things? Like, you know, it starts to turn into different frames at this point. But yeah, at the multiple million dollar mark, the seven figure mark, the eight figure mark, the nine figure mark, your lifestyle is not going to change that much.
Yeah, I mean, you can see that actually, you know, when you look at successful entrepreneurs, you know, they still strive for power or success. Obviously, suddenly you got the money, you do not have these kind of problems anymore. But, you know, suddenly you want to send a spaceship to Mars, or I don't know, look at what Elon does, look at what other people do. I think it's like just not about money anymore. You know, like you do not have the problems of paying your mortgage or you know, have to worry about how to pay your bills. That's and this right. is actually a pretty good thing in my opinion. Like you should definitely strive for, you know, gaining financial freedom
at 100%. Some
point in your life.
100%. That should be your first goal. I mean, your first goal is to take care of yourself. You know, that's why you know, in creative and achievement circles, people who don't make an effort to create in life are so looked down upon. You know, it's no one has a problem with someone who falls on bad times, right? Like everybody has something negative happen. You know, like I had someone steal basically a third of my wealth in January, right? And I've been working my ass off to try and recoup from that and figure a way out of it. And that type of shit happens. And, you know, I could just quit and go live in a ditch somewhere and live off of handouts or whatever. But, you know, there's no honor in that and there's no achievement in that and there's no feeling good about yourself about that. So, I mean, no one has an issue with people who fall in hard times and then, you know, try their best doing whatever they have to do, whether they live in a ditch or a car or, you know, eat out of a dumpster. Like, no one cares if you're doing that. And those are the people that really need the help. It's the people who are capable and do nothing that are the problem. And so, like, you know, people talk all the time about, you know, billionaires being greedy. And the truth is everyone is greedy. It's just that the games that we play determine how much money that we have. So at the end of the day, if I'm playing a financial game, if I don't get good at playing the financial game, I'm going to lose everything, right? If I'm playing a football game and I'm not good at football, they're going to bench me and ultimately fire me. If I'm playing the game of husband and I'm a shitty husband and I'm not taking care of things, I'm going to get a divorce, right? We all get fired from the thing that we don't do well. So the first thing that we should learn how to do well so that we have time to invest in ourselves is free ourselves from the, you know, from the pains of finances. So like job number one as young adult is free yourself and be productive. And maybe you do that through a job. Maybe you do that through building a business. Maybe you do that through, you know, maybe you inherit some money and you start learning how to invest. I don't know. But that's your first role, because at that point, now you can take care of all the people who can't take care of themselves. And you don't want to be one of those people, right?
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I mean, to some degree, this system we have kind of, you know, puts you like in chains. Obviously, when people, like, I get the impression that people would do everything for money. Like as long as, you know, the price is right, they would do anything. Like it's crazy. And, you know, to break free from all this and to not have to worry about all that kind of stuff should definitely be, your first goal. And, It's actually almost sad to see, you know, what people are willing to do just, you know, to get money.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, when you say get money, it oversimplifies what's happening, right? Like, if for example, you work, you know, you're in your 30s. Let's say you've been in the workforce for, 15 to 20 years, whatever, right? And over the course of that 15 to 20 years, you've amassed a certain amount of wealth, okay? So basically, the wealth that you've amassed is a representation of the life force that you spent to get it, right? And that's always how we all start out. We start trading life force. We trade our time. We trade our life to earn money. And the reason that we're doing that is because we know one day we won't be able to do that, and we need to have our wealth to support us in those tough times or in those retirement days, okay? And what the government did is the government came along and said, okay, well, we'll take care of everybody, but we'll do that by stealing a little bit from everybody. So now you don't get 100% of the fruits of your labor. You get a percentage of it, and a percentage of your life force is stolen by the government to give to other people. The problem with that is the government is not good at deciding who should and should not be helped. The person who doesn't help themselves should not be helped. The person who helps themselves should be helped. And at the end of the day, when you have like a big centralized authority redistributing wealth, you always get people who milk the system. I keep seeing all these videos on X right now where people are like posting, oh, Trump took my welfare, Trump took my food stamps. And there's like this one guy on a video who was getting something like almost 10 grand a month in like food stamps and welfare. And it got cut to something like, I don't know, like 300 bucks or 1200 bucks. I forget. It was some massive cut, right? And you know, he's like, how am I supposed to feed all my kids? You know, I'm like, well, you know what? Like, at the end of the day, if there were consequences for having kids you couldn't afford, how many kids would people have if they knew they couldn't afford them, especially in an era of birth control? And if we lived in a world of like responsibility, how many times would you say, okay, well, this person over here has 10 kids that they can't support, and now they're living off the government, which means they're living off the taxpayer. Okay, how much of my money does that person deserve? You know, how much of the work of my life force should they get, right? And so it comes into this situation where we get down to decision making. So like some people make good decisions and some people don't. And the people who make good decisions should not be penalized because other people make bad decisions and can't live with the consequences of their bad decisions, right? This is the problem with socialism. This is why it never works anywhere in the world, because ultimately people figure out how to milk the system, and too many people end up on the wagon rather than pulling the wagon. That's why it always fails.
Yeah, but that's what happens in almost all Western countries. And, you know, I do get like the dilemma you are in when you feel like, okay, but like what's the alternative? Like, should we, you know, just let poor people alone who are not able to take care of themselves. I don't know, man. It's like, I don't want to be in the position to decide all that, obviously, but I see what you mean when you say that, you know, people who are making these decisions are not good at it. Yeah, but obviously that's a pretty big topic.
Well, I mean, it's funny because like all of this stuff pertains to wealth creation. And like I said earlier, like your first job is to free yourself, right? So, I mean, we can talk about all the government programs that don't work because they're run by some bureaucracy that can't know you. Now, if you were in a community, let's say you're in a community, you're a productive citizen, and that community, inside that community, you're known for being, I don't know, maybe you make shoes or maybe you... I don't know, maybe you run a shop, you sell jewelry, or whatever you do, right? You do something in that community. You're known to be a producer, and you fall on hard times. There's not a single person in that community that would want to see you do poorly or not be willing to help you, right? And the distinction that needs to be drawn is that when we're doing like these blanket government programs that just throw money at different people, there's no consideration for what that person produced to get into the situation that they're in. So if they're there through no fault of their own, like something bad happened to them, natural catastrophe, you know, death, robbery, theft, some sort of act of violence, some sort of health issue, there's not a single person who wouldn't be open to giving that person part of their wealth. And you see this all the time in like private fundraising. You know, so-and-so was a loved member of the community and we've set up a, you know, a GoFundMe and we have the radio station over here, you know, taking donations. And you see these people who've been producers like raise hundreds and thousands of dollars because people know that they were contributors. It's just that when people are not contributors and your money goes to support people who will continue to not contribute, that it's a problem. And unfortunately, when you have a big bureaucracy, they can't know that person, right? And when they can't know that person, that means the system can be gamed. And when the system is gamed, everybody loses. And so this is the situation that Western countries find themselves in, because we all want to outsource everything. You know, we outsource our power production to the power company, our water to the water company. We outsource our generosity to the government, who's going to steal a percentage of my income and give it to someone else who's more quote unquote deserving, right? But at the end of the day, if we can't accurately depict the person and what they, you know, what they've contributed in order to get what they've earned or what they've received in form of charity, they're not going to feel good about themselves. People who were taking money from are not going to feel good about themselves, and the outcomes are going to be bad, because what you end up doing is subsidizing bad behavior. And if you subsidize bad behavior, that person will never free themselves, ever. And that's what we've done, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you listed the problems, you know, that we currently have, but do you have a solution?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I'll offer one, and you know, it's not a popular one. But look at this. Okay, let's say that, you know, it's funny. Let's just look at nature. Okay, everybody has this vision of nature as being this beautiful, wonderful, caring mother, this goddess who takes care of all the creatures in the forest and provides food and water for everyone. The truth is, nature is a cold, heartless bitch. It doesn't give a fuck about you or anybody else. It just does what it does, okay? Now, if we were, quote unquote, separated from modern societies and we were thrown back 200 or 300 years, where we were living in tribes or living in small communities, fending for ourselves, the person who doesn't produce is ostracized, meaning you die, okay? So what we've done in the modern world is we've removed all shame from non-production. And in fact, we've obfuscated it with facade. So like if I go into a retail store here, let's say I'm in line at Walmart or whatever, there'll be someone in front of me who might be on some sort of government handout, and they'll have 5 or 6 different debit cards that they're going to pay for their groceries. Meanwhile, they're wearing designer jeans and holding a $1,000 iPhone or $1,500 iPhone in their hands, okay? They're going to pay for their groceries with the same debit card, or one that looks like mine with minor differences, so that they don't have to endure the embarrassment of not being a producer, right? Now, if that person had to show up and pony up with food stamps or something visible in front of other people while wearing designer jeans and holding a $1,500 iPhone and having 3 kids who are all wearing $200 pairs of kid Nike Jordans, like, people who were stolen from to create that are going to be a little bit pissed off, you know? So like all of these sort of social constructs that we've created to not shame people, to not make people feel bad, you have to realize that at the same time, you remove all motivation from people to do better. There is actually a benefit to some of those things, you know? So you have to set up systems that actually cause people to be motivated to create better outcomes. And we don't have that right now.
When you just mentioned that example, I was like immediately thinking about the whole concept of body positivity. Now, how people want to make you feel like if you're fat, it's totally okay.
Yeah, exactly.
it's absolutely not bad for your health. Like, obviously it is. And, you know, like, I mean, for some reason, you know, these days, like governments or especially Western cultures try to make you feel like you can do and be whatever you want, like even with, you know, genders or with the way you look, or like that definitely should have its boundaries. But but like I said, like, this is a topic we could probably discuss or ours in our little NFT crypto podcast. So let's speak a little bit about the beautiful NFT drop we had, the Artist Incubator drop. Julie had her audacious piece dropped today, 8 minutes until it was sold out. And I just wanted to shout out real quick again. We just did that on Spaces as well. But like, just to all the artists out there, I mean, it's like always great to be in company of like-minded people who have the same dedication and determination for, you know, what we all do in this space. And it's rare to meet these kind of people, actually, because I remember back then when we started and founded that project and we wanted to get together with, like, you remember, like, when we, you know, founded the Goodfellas project, and we've been in that big group of 8 people. And, you know, as soon as it came down to, you know, responsibilities and everything, you know, all of them ran away and were like, oh, I do not have the time. And, you know, in the end, it was you and I. And 2 years later, we are still here. Like I said, it's great to meet that kind of people.
Yeah, of course.
And that's why we're always happy to, you know, get in touch with artists who think the way we do, who cherish art. And Julie is definitely one of that kind. And it was a great collaboration, in my opinion. The piece turned out awesome. First ever animated GIF. Great work. Jason as well, like, it looked like it turned out very, very good, the GIF that you created, and another smooth mint experience. So Artist Incubator drop number, it was 20, right? It wasn't 21.
The number is 20 on the piece, but it's the 21st piece. Because remember, we start with zero,
right?
Okay. Yeah, everything starts with zero on the Solana blockchain for some reason.
Yeah, because like when I announced that in the very beginning of the spaces, I was like, okay, it's number 21. And then when I minted the piece and I saw 20, I was like, dude, did I like was I wrong? Or what's wrong here? But you're perfectly right. Like it's we started with zero, so drop number 21 sold out again and couldn't be happier. And now we got this Sirens coming up, a collection a lot of you guys are looking forward to. And Jason said he will be ready to go with the existing ones by the end of the week or the beginning of the next week. Am I correct?
That's the plan, my friend. I have pretty much everything I need to seed the project, you know, of course. So I've just got to have to redo all of the data files, which means I'll have to recombine them and then update the traits to fit the new format that we're doing on Core. But yeah, once that part is done, then everything should be ready to rock, and we'll get that stuff out. So kind of just depends on how long it takes to get through all the data.
Yeah, okay, perfect. I mean, really looking forward to the Sirens. Definitely one of it's a great collection. I mean, I loved that we rescued that collection as well back then when we started all this. And I see that a lot of people love the art. So Sirens are up next, and you guys should keep an eye out on the Discord, because we will disclose information on what you guys have to do in case you hold a Siren. I think there's not a single one listed, right?
There wasn't when I last looked. I was going to buy them all up, but the last time I was there weren't any. I don't know if any have been listed since, but if they are, I'm definitely going to snap them up.
All right. Yeah, I think last time I checked, there was no listing. There is still a chance for anyone who is new to, you know, to the community, to the project, to become part of it, because we will have a little batch of 90 Sirens when we will have our little family reunion, right after that, because we will of course start distributing the Solana pieces of the existing ones, and then we should be good to go, man. A lot of great stuff ahead. It's like, you know, the good old saying, the best is yet to come, is still in place. And I look forward to all the stuff, man.
Yeah, me too, man. It should be fun. And then, of course, getting Daria's art onto on-chain with what she's been doing. You know, that's going to be super cool. We'll have a first batchment, a smaller batchment up front. And then, of course, we've got some other plans for things with that we put on Stargaze, like the mint passes. We're going to bring those pieces over to Sol as well and do some cool things with those. So, yeah, lots of really cool things planned for that collection, no doubt about it. And I'm stoked to see them, you know, all just be unified. Honestly, it just makes things so much easier, to be quite honest with you. And then with all the development that's happening on Solana, from, you know, tokenized stocks on down, I mean, it's just, I think it's one of the better chains to be on right now. So I'm stoked that we are where we are and we can continue to build there and do some cool things.
Yeah, man. And we'll definitely try to have another deep conversation with Daria on Spaces, or maybe even on the podcast, and speak about the art again. I'd love to hear how her creation process is, and, you know, how she picks the kind of traits she picks, like the outfits, the hair traits. We obviously got an impression of you know, the way she works in, like, in our private Telegram group. But obviously, like I said, like I on Spaces, I just mentioned that we have Anna coming up as an artist, incubator artist, and she provided a little video of the process, of the creation process of her piece. And I always love to see, you know, all these behind the scenes things, and, you know, why artists chose to do it this or that way. And yeah, that's why I think it's pretty interesting for people to hear Daria's perspective as well. And yeah, this should be it for today. Was it actually, like we said, we should keep it a little shorter today because we were on Spaces, but I think we kind of hit a good time here. Any final words from your side?
Yeah, no, we ended up doing like 40 minutes. So I think we probably went a little longer than we planned talking about the money stuff, but hey, it is what it is.
Yep, absolutely. All right, fellas, so have a great week. We'll catch you guys on Spaces on Friday, and yep. Go touch some grass. No, it's not weekend. You do that on the weekends, obviously. go check the markets every day, every second you have.
Yeah, no, you can do it today too.
Have a good one.
Yeah, for sure. Take care, guys. Mint was awesome today. Appreciate everyone who participated. We got a lot more cool stuff coming. So stay tuned and have a great week.